Hello, you're listening to Spoiler
Build Film
Conversation.
Hooray!
Hey.
So guys, it's all of us, Filmbin, together. I'm Richard Nicholas, also Anthony Evans.
Hello.
Jamie Thomas.
Hi.
And Abigail Bain.
Hello.
I picked a film this week. That film was Human Traffic. It is not about Eastern European gangsters forcing women to become prostitutes. It's about something much nicer. It's about recreational drug use. That's what it's
Yay.
About.
Yeah.
Happy days.
It's about the pros and cons, and it's set in Wales. And I picked it because I wanted a Welsh-ish theme, because, you know, we're all Welsh, right, guys?
Yes.
Yeah.
There's no Englishman hiding in the ranks. good. But we don't really do many Welsh things. I think we've done a commentary for Zulu, but I wanted to do something about, or at least set in, the homeland. And we went for this one. There's a few other options, but we might, you know, do them another time. So let's just get on with this one. Human Traffic. So, Abby, could you do me a favour and read out who made this and who's in it for us to know?
Yes. Human Traffic was made in 1999. It was written and directed by Justin Kerrigan. It starred John Sim, Lorraine Pilkington, Sean Parks, Nicola Reynolds, and Danny Dyer.
Also making tiny cameo appearances are Andrew Lincoln and Richard Coyle. Oh, gems from the British world of sitcoms. And that is by eclectic sincerity.
Hold on. Richard Coyle.
Yeah.
Jeff from Coupling.
Oh, I thought you were talking about somebody very different when you said was the gem of British sitcoms, and I thought, whoa, I thought you were talking about Mr. Nice, and I was going to correct you.
Is that the dude who does the little speech about in the club or something? He does a bit.
He does the joint etiquette speech thing.
Yeah, I've watched the film Mr. Nice. This is just tangentially. And that was okay, but a bit halfway too American than it should have been.
You wanted it to be as Welsh as possible.
Mm. Yeah, whereas it seemed to be a Welshman in America was the premise of the film. But let's not dwell on that. No. Anthony, let's start with you. Had you seen this film? And before you'd seen this film, what were you expecting from it?
No, I've never seen it before. It's always been on my periphery as, like, just one of, like, the few Welsh films that people seem to know and like. I don't really know what I was expecting. It always had praise everywhere I'd been, and I've always wanted to see it, but never had the chance. So I don't know what I was expecting. I guess something in a similar vein to, like, Trainspotting, I guess.
Yeah, that's a probably acceptable comparison. It's not quite the same kettle of fish, but it is that kind of thing.
But no, open mind. I'm Welsh. I should like Welsh things, right?
No, there's no allegiances you have to have. We may all be passionate about rugby and leeks and stuff, but like, I don't know. There's nothing I expect of people. They don't have to like Welsh stuff if you're Welsh. I don't think.
I'm in traditional Welsh dress right now.
What, one of those weird stovepipe hats and, like, a dress?
Yes.
Although, yeah, for a man, it is a red rugby jersey and a flat cap. For a woman, it's a far more outlandish, ancient piece of...
Yeah, but the women don't have to wear an actual leek pinned to their jacket, so, you know.
Yeah.
I say have to, we do every day, it's like uniform.
Yeah, just a little background on Wales if you're not Welsh. And if you are, you know, you'll recall, as I say the words, that our national vegetable, because every country needs one of them, is the leek. Our national flower is the daffodil. And you have to like rugby, and you have to work in a coal mine, or if you live in modern Wales, a supermarket. That's the new one, just in case you guys didn't know. What else is Welsh? The Red Dragon. I don't know, there's not much to Wales culture-wise. There were some Celts, then they were killed by pretty much every race on Earth, and now we just sit about, you know, having cheese and ham toasties.
that's a very good summary of the entire Welsh history.
Yeah, I know this. It's pretty. You know, nothing really. There's nothing really important to know about Welsh culture, and this film will help. We're basically up for a laugh, and that's about it. That's all you. We're vaguely passionate. We're not anything. You can't generalise. I don't think. No one Welsh I know is exactly like the stereotype.
You can kind of define Wales and Welsh culture as a bunch of people going, hey, a lot. That's it.
Yeah. But when I was looking up Welsh-themed films, most of them I looked up seemed to be about coal mining, and about three of them had the word valley in the title. It was really quite depressing how stereotyped like our nation is, just generally. Just, yeah, it's all valleys and coal mining. That's all they're about.
A lot of it is we stereotype ourselves because we don't seem to think we have anything else. So we just make films about valleys and coal mines.
Yeah. So, you know, there was a few films about other things, but mostly it was, well, it could be about rugby or it could be about coal mining or it can have a valley or a hill in the title. You know.
That's only been true until, like, the last, I don't know, 10 years, because now we've gone through this resurgence because Cardiff is, like,
making
for whatever
Doctor
reason,
Who.
It's the place to be. And yeah, it's got Doctor Who and Torchwood and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's, you know, two sci-fi.
They're really popular, like, at the moment in 2014. Somebody may be listening to this in the future and not know what the hell Doctor Who is. But, suddenly the world, or the sci-fi watching world, knows Wales exists at all.
I, to be honest, think it's just Welsh people think it's more of a big deal than it is. Outside of Wales, people don't even realise like where stuff was made.
No, because they mention Cardiff in like Torchwood and Doctor Who.
Bless their cons.
Are they doing? They do in Torchwood, and they always do it really loud and boldly as if to remind people.
I was about to say that I did find it a little bit suspicious how much they name dropped Cardiff. Like,
it almost comes brackets, not London. See, we can film that somewhere.
Yeah.
But in my mind, there's about three or four, five, maybe, at best, good Welsh films, and Human Traffic, I think, is one of them. Twin Town is another one. And maybe Grand Slam, though that's a weird little thing. And, you know, Submarine, that's a new, fresh, awesome one. That's probably the best Welsh film. Well, at least set in Wales film, anyway. I would say I've seen. Anyone got any contenders for really good Welsh films?
I think you've named all of them.
Yeah, I couldn't even think of any.
Apart from, like, you know, How Green Was My Valley or Under Milkwood and all that kind of stuff that nobody cares about anymore.
Yeah, there's a few Welsh language films. I don't think I've ever seen a Welsh language film. Yeah, there's a couple of ones that have got some, you know, critical acclaim, but not enough that you'd bother to watch them.
Anthony, did film, did we have to watch a Welsh language film that had Ewan Griffith in it? And if we did, can you remember what it was called?
We did. It didn't have Ewan Griffith in it, but the film was called Hear the Wind.
All right, so I remembered the correct title the other day, but I had planted Ewan Griffith in it.
He's in a film. He's in lots of films, but he is in a Welsh film. Oh, it doesn't matter. There's not much Welsh people have given to cinema, and we're just going to look at one of them today. And by look at, I mean talk about. We've looked at. You should look at. Look at Human Traffic. Come back to us, or don't, and we'll carry on with the podcast. So, Jamie, your expectations. Yes, we're still at this stage of the bloody podcast.
I, pretty much the same as Anthony, I'd never seen it, but it had always, like, I was aware of it. And, yeah, I knew it was come from, like, you know, that 90s kind of drug club culture that became, I think, very popular in film, mainly because of Trainspotting. So I was expecting something as bleak as Trainspotting. Mm. You know, I was expecting people getting, you know, people going out and having a good time taking drugs, and then the drugs would mess them up and terrible things would happen and, you know, maybe somebody would die. I was basically expecting Welsh Requiem for a Dream.
Okay. Well, it's not, it's
maybe
not
that. yeah.
It's somewhere between Trainspotting and Kevin and Perry Go Large, I would say.
Well, I don't know. I don't want to get into it too much too early, but it's far more upbeat than Trainspotting.
Yeah, it's just a...
That's not hard.
No, that's true.
Yeah, if you were, you know...
I think it's a lot more upbeat than a lot of people would assume it's going to be.
You assume if it's going to be about drug culture, it's going to be a bit of a row. Like,
yeah.
It's going to be a patronising, condescending look at what the bad effects
yeah.
are. And it addresses that, but it doesn't make that big a fuss of it.
No, and I was also not expecting, like, the crux of the story to be erectile dysfunction. Like that.
Yeah.
That was a big surprise.
Oh, a lack of surprise. No, wait, that's not right. Anyway, Abby, what were you expecting when I suggested this one?
I was quite looking forward to it because I've seen Human Traffic before and I enjoyed it. But I think the first time I watched it was more or less, my expectations were based more or less just on the cover where John Sim shouts and some other people stand behind him looking vaguely content.
There is a lot of John Sim shouting. In fact, all the characters shout in various different mock accents and spout weird nonsense throughout. I wouldn't say you guessed wrong by looking at the cover. I mean, I can't remember when I first watched it, but it was very reminiscent of the generation just before ours. Or I say ours, meaning me and Anthony at least, maybe Jamie as well, where it was, we weren't quite their age at this time. We were younger, but we were in this kind of culture in many ways. Would you guys agree?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to bring up the same point later on.
Yeah.
But I can't now.
Sorry. Just deprived you something to say. That's what I do. But, you know, it was very much a film that I related to. And now that I've re-looked at it much, you know, like maybe 7 years on from when I must have first seen it, No, even more than that now. Like, but looking at it from the point of view of someone older than the main characters now, I felt a weird embarrassment on their behalf and related to it in a horrible, yeah, we were a bit sort of full of our own philosophies as, like, teenagers and 20-somethings, and it's just sad now. I don't know, there was a lot of, like, mutually... just relatable and embarrassing things in this film that I kind of felt wrong to be so connected to. I don't know. But it has a sort of personal connection with me just because it's a lot like a culture I've lived partly in. So anyway.
I was going to say the only way that I can really describe it for me is that this movie is what... Because I'm that little bit older than you guys. This is what people of my age wish they were like.
Yeah. There were so many scenes in it that reminded me of being at somebody's house party or in somebody's bedroom or dragged somewhere. And, like, everybody acts exactly like the people in this film act, and I can't work out if it's because they had seen this film and wanted to, or if this film just captured some element of the human condition.
I think it holds a very accurate mirror up to that kind of generation of the early 80s, late 90s that were out in the clubs and stuff, and just in our part of the world having a social life. I don't know. I just think it was a very accurate portrayal of this kind of culture, and a very amusing one, and we should probably say what happens a bit in it, although you could probably just sum it up quite easily as people go out at the weekend. Like,
I think this is my problem I had with it, is that it's almost a too realistic portrayal, because it's so realistic that not a lot happens.
Well, we've got some key problems for people. Let's talk about each of the characters, and they'll have a slight narrative arc that we can talk about. So our main character, played by John Sim, is Jip. Not spelt Jip as in Jippo. Spelt Jip as in... I don't know what. Why is he called Jip?
I don't know. It's never... His full name's never said, is it?
They've all got weird little nicknames, apart from the ladies. Not uncommon of people from Wales. There's plenty of people I know with stupid nicknames.
Well, kind of, but I'd have thought if they were going, like, you know, properly Welsh, he'd have been called, like, Gyp Shoes or something.
Yeah, everyone's got that, like, a name, and then the name, like, you know, we had a friend called John Teapot Head. And, you know, there's any description. So, like, I would be known as Big Rich to some people. There's a guy who lives near me called Fat Vince. Dirty Pie, Die Div. Divid, like, stupid, if you don't understand how to speak Welsh-ish. It's not even Welsh, it's just a word we use here.
Yeah, the Welsh nicknaming convention is that you're not nicknamed something, but your name is put with a thing that you do or are known for.
Yeah.
So Coop in this would be Coop Records.
Yeah. Percy down the shop, like. John Radio. Like, yeah, I don't know, yeah. But yeah, we have Gyp. He is our main character. And he is having, as you say, the problem of he can't make love as he wants to. that's not right.
He can't get an erection, is what you're trying to say.
You are allowed to use clinical terms, Rich.
And I'm going to use loads now all the way through because you said clinical terms. That means I'm going to say penis as many times as I can.
But anyway, our main character, Gyp, has penile dysfunction at the critical moment of lovemaking. And he's dealing with that. And our other characters are Coop, who is... Actually, there's not a lot of Welsh people in this. They're all in Cardiff. That's where it's set. But yeah, a lot of them are from different places.
Also, I'm pretty sure the film said it was made by Irish Screen as well.
That's what I saw that as well. What?
Yeah, but all things Welsh aren't really Welsh. Like, you know, potatoes and curry. Those are things that Welsh people love, and they're not Welsh in any way. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. It isn't... It's a Welsh enough to be getting on with. There's plenty of Welsh characters. But John Sim isn't Welsh, but his mum is Welsh. Coop is like...
It's kind of incidental that it's set in Wales.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not about Welsh club culture. It just happens to be set in Cardiff.
So, all right, I didn't pick a Welsh film, and we'll just have to do one next time.
Well, no, because it was written and directed by a guy from Cardiff, therefore it counts.
Yeah, there's loads of Welsh people in it, and it's at least one of the characters is Welsh. And, you know, the director's in it, he wrote it, he's Welsh, it's Welsh everywhere. I don't care, it counts. And if I say Welsh anymore, I will turn into some Barra Breeth. So... why do we eat seaweed in this country? There's no taste of that there. With like breakfast, we just ruin it by chucking some seaweed. I don't even like it. Does anyone like horrible burnt seaweed?
I like seaweed, but I like it as it comes with Chinese food, not necessarily how we do it.
Yeah.
I have had said seaweed and it made me throw up. I will never be doing it again.
Did you eat it raw from the sea?
That's what it tasted like.
Yes, but then what else is it meant to taste like, really? Welsh cakes, that's something we did all right. I mean, I don't like them myself, but lots of people like Welsh cakes.
Well, yeah, we did all right, but we ruined them by putting dried fruit in them.
What's wrong with putting a bit of fruit in a drops con, Jamie?
Oh, it's like just shoving little dead flies in there. It's horrible.
I don't like them, I'm with you. You guys like Welsh cakes, all right?
Oh, yeah.
Sick!
When did this podcast become a podcast about Wales?
When I tried to make the point that it isn't actually that Welsh, it's got a lot of English characters in.
Let's just sing, come on.
Yeah, no. Sospan fa.
That's not happening. That was great,
it's not happening. Right. So Coop is a sort of South London-y dude. I don't really know my regions of London that well. Anyone?
Sounds like he's from London.
Yeah.
And Danny Dyer plays a character who's also sort of a Cockney geezer. And,
Danny Dyer plays Danny Dyer.
Oh yeah, but it's early Danny Dyer. Kind of baby-faced Danny Dyer. Back when he was first bishing his first boshes, you know? Very hard to say that.
As his mum walks in on him doing later in the film.
Yeah, but he's playing full-blown Cockney geezer, mushty, cushty, oi oi, how's about that then, safe, brav, you know, Cockney. Yeah. And we also have his name. What's his name? Moff. Don't know.
Moff, yeah.
Don't know why. I don't know why. Coops. Coop.
It's short for something like.
It's Matthew.
Yeah.
Of course it is, because if you drop the W, the E, the T, the H, the A, and add some other letters, it makes perfect sense.
Well, his dad calls him Matthew.
Yeah, so I guess that must be his name.
Yeah.
Oh, God. This is going very long at the moment.
All right, Rich. Just re-spool.
Okay.
We'll make it.
We've got also Lulu. Does anyone know who plays Lulu?
Lorraine Pilkington.
She has very frizzy blonde hair and is Irish.
She's probably the most 90s looking out of everyone in the cast.
She could easily be in the background of like a Girls... not Girls Aloud, that's not 90s. What are they called? Spice Girls.
Spice Girls.
Yeah.
Girls, she definitely has that kind of girl power vibe going.
And also Nina.
Nina.
Who I've only ever seen this actress in the also drug related sitcom
Ideal,
yes, thank you, with Johnny Vegas in the main role there.
I think we know the way her ideological bread is buttered.
And it's buttered with drugs. But that's our kind of main characters. We also have Lee, who is the sort of younger brother of Nina, who's coming along for the first time to experience that kind of culture.
Aww.
And he's more of a bit part. They're the main friends who are on this night out. And we were trying to talk about their problems. What were their problems? Coop is a bit paranoid about his girlfriend, who is Nina. Mm-hmm. And he's a bit of a... He works in a record shop. He's a kind of blagger. He kind of spends most of his time conning his punters into buying records at high prices. Would anyone take away anything else from who Coop is as a person?
He seems like the most reasonable of all of them. Yes, he's a little bit paranoid about his girlfriend. But other than that, he's a small businessman who does quite well and is quite good at his job.
He has a very unique way of entering cars, I seem to recall.
Yeah.
Tremendous part of the film when he sort of Superman dives in through the window. Perfect, like, technique and landing. Incredible.
I'm going to start doing that from now on.
Diving headfirst into cars.
Yeah, the window may be rolled up. Or may I, you know, we're just going to have to see how things go.
And I guess, how do we best explain what Moth, or Moth, how would we say his name?
We best explain Moth by going, wee!
Oh, lad, yeah, just the big elongated drugged up Danny Dyer session.
Yeah.
All of Danny Dyer on a plate, kushti. Yeah. Yeah.
His problems in the film seem to be more a kind of microcosm of the whole culture, really, because his problems are more the kind of over-defining problems of the culture, if you see what I mean.
He's like 20, living at home, his life's not really going anywhere, and he just makes money dealing drugs, but... Jip says in the introduction, he's not, like, a dealer in the sense that he's not involved in anything particularly negative. Like, he just sells us some drugs. That's, again, that's another, like, difference from something like Trainspotting. Like, there's no consequences to what Moff does other than his parents just thinking he's a bit of a layabout.
Yeah, and he's trying to get his stuff together, and he's full of bizarre thoughts. There's an odd moment that I really love in the film, where he's talking to a taxi driver. I mean, he spends his whole time a bit baked, but he spends his time ranting about how the film Taxi Driver is really good, and that he would like to torture Peter Andre in a range of bizarre and frightful ways before finishing him off in the way Travis Bickle might have. I think that says enough about the psyche of Moff's character. Like, he's a bizarre man. But I still find myself relating to him and all the characters a little bit. I probably would torture Peter Andre myself as well. Not sure about the coat hanger down the... anyway. Nina, she is a person who works in the same role as SpongeBob. I've forgotten what that's called. Fry Cook. She works at a... What is a McDonald's, guy? Someone explain what she does.
She stands around and complains to the camera before her really, literally slimy boss. Yeah, which was one of the grossest but most entertaining scenes of the film.
I love the way the guy really committed to it.
Oh, yeah, I know. He loved that. I'm not going to be in the film for 2 minutes. I am going to do everything I can to make sure everyone remembers me.
It is probably the most obnoxious you could ever be. If you're working in a burger joint anyway, and you're covered in grease, like, covered in grease, and just sticking your tongue out and being the biggest tool ever, just...
It was... That was one of the things that I liked about the film was the surrealism, like the it sounds weird, but like the literal symbolism. Yeah. And then he appears on screen and he's, you know, he's covered in goo and it's like soaked through his shirt. And it's obviously like, it's not literal, but the film just presents it to you. Like, yeah, this guy is so gross. He's physically oozing his pervy sexuality.
And that causes Nina to quit her job. And that's kind of where she's at. And, Lulu, it sounds weird when I say that name.
Yeah.
She has gone through a bad relationship and has come out, well, she's been dumped or whatever, and she's just on the rebound, sort of.
Well, she's best friends with Jip, and they've got that kind of, like, oh, best friends, but, you know, let's never cross the line thing going on.
Yeah. And that kind of is how everyone is before their night on the tiles, as it were.
And, yeah, they're all friends and regularly go out taking drugs and clubbing together.
Hmm. And it's an interesting film in that it spends a lot of time with the main characters talking directly to camera. It's kind of... It's correctly, I think, youthful in its style. It's kind of... It felt sort of contemporary at the time, and it was trying to be sort of youthful, and that was a kind of way of expressing that, I think, the sort of talking directly to camera, the fantasy scenes where people sort of imagine... Like the thing, they would say things, and then that would kind of. Can anyone explain what I mean about the fantasy sequences?
The whole tone and pace of the film kind of suits well to the subject matter.
Yeah. And it's just imaginative, and it doesn't like shy away from being surreal. Like it doesn't try and ground itself particularly, which is strange considering how, like I was saying before, how like unremarkable the actual story is. Like, the story is basically they organise to go on a night out, they go on a night out, they have a good time, the end.
Yeah, but throughout that, we have people's daydreams and metaphors visually shown to us, and everything's slightly exaggerated. Maybe instead of customers just walking into a place, they'll be like on a special, like they're on a board on wheels that we can't see and being pulled closer towards us and stuff, and we'll rotate... you know, the camera around at times. It's really, like, directing-wise, it's very interesting, I think.
Yeah, there's a lot of little flourishes that are really interesting. One of my favourites was a little bit later on when the two guys at the university come and talk to Lulu, and they're talking and smoking, and every now and again you get a flash of two naked bums.
Yeah.
Looking at the camera, which also smoke as they're talking.
Yeah,
it's like a literal representation of what the characters are thinking.
But there's so many different ones. It isn't like everyone is the same sort of idea where you literally take a metaphor and show it. It comes up with a lot of different creative ways to show things. My favourite is one I have to be very careful when explaining. But Jip's mourning on about his job being mundane, and he works in basically a jean shop, it seems, and his boss is a bit of a git. And while he's explaining how his boss is a git, we are shown the visual metaphor of said boss making love vigorously to Jip from behind with a £20 note over Jip's mouth. And he does a fantastic job of making all the sounds that are just right for that activity. And he kind of explains and finishes himself off while giving Jip a row. It's tremendously well done.
It was a pretty good representation of working in retail, I thought.
Yeah. But there's lots of things like that throughout that are just genius and to be commended. But the first part of the story is kind of about organising the night out, getting the tickets for the... Apparently, it's really difficult to get tickets to essentially what is some DJing at a club. I don't know whether it's ever been that hard, really. Occasionally, a place might be full or there's a queue, but I don't know where anything has been that special in my experience that you can't get in.
They had some kind of special guest that night. That was the impression that I got.
Yeah, it's the sort of thing that might happen in Sex and the City. You can't get into a club because it's too popular, because all the beatniks are there. Like, you know. But in Cardiff, just a DJ turning up is enough.
Wait, did you watch a different Sex and the City set in the 1950s where there were beatniks?
I was just, you know, that's what trendy New Yorkers are called, isn't it? No, you know what I mean, though? Like, it's the same sort of, like, you know... Oh, there's a party that's popular, therefore it's hard to get in, kind of thing.
Yeah.
To me, that always seemed weird, because nowhere's ever that busy. Like, I don't know.
I don't know, Subway during half-term is pretty impossible.
Not the Subway, Subway the sandwich shop.
Yeah.
It does get pretty hectic in Carmarthen, doesn't it, Jimmy? Oh, ridiculous. But yeah, that's the first problem, is they don't all have tickets to this thing.
Well, the first, like, major problem is Jip's problem.
Yeah,
oh, like, that's the central...
Mr. Floppy, as it's referred to.
Yeah, and there is another really good scene that sets that up where some woman who he's had an encounter with and that has gone wrong turns up with a new boyfriend in the shop he's working in. And then, yeah, the little imagination sequence where she's asking him... Not actually asking him, but in his mind asking him what went wrong. And he's wearing a T-shirt with a flaccid penis on it saying, Mr. Floppy.
And also, I like that, for in reality, that would be a split second of, oh, this is uncomfortable, she remembers me from that bad night. And then all of what happens in the fantasy sequence where she just questions him and he answers and tries to, you know, explain himself. And then everyone, like, then I think all of the people in the shop have T-shirts on, 100%. Heterosexual.
100% hetero,
And they're all chanting at him how rubbish he is. And it's just, that all happens in that moment of, oh, this is awkward, and then it's over. But in your mind, it lasts so much longer and it's so much more painful. I think that kind of does that really well. It's kind of a well-observed moment. Where else do we get really interesting bits of directorial flair, guys?
I'm just trying to think, because there's so many little bits and pieces all the way in. It likes its cutaways.
Yeah.
When, for example, after Nina's quit her job, she's wearing her towel, and they have a cutaway to her opening her front door and talking to the press about how she feels to be part of the 2 million.
Yeah. They have lots of moments where they kind of reference media reaction to things. Like, later on in the club, they have a news presenter guy coming in the club, and he sort of starts talking about drug culture and how it works, and explains the club scenario to us. And then descends into sort of joining in, doesn't he?
Jeremy Factsman.
Yeah.
And by the end, he's just reaching for the lasers himself.
Yeah.
And they also have, I think, a news team in the club interviewing punters, and then Nina and Lulu do kind of mock answers where they start off really nice and then over-exaggerate the kind of a night they'd have where they just do heroin and stuff and...
I was briefly confused by that because I didn't know if it was what they were imagining or what if it was actually happening.
No, it happened because the woman who interviewed them got really irritated after they'd gone.
Yeah, but it took me a second to sort of clock in either direction.
Yeah, that's kind of a running theme though, isn't it? This idea of media reaction and how the world perceives drug culture and how it is from them on the inside. They spend a lot of time sort of philosophizing on it as well.
Part of the, like, I guess, sort of point of the film is that drugs aren't presented as overtly negative in this film. Like, well, it's actually spelled out explicitly now I think about it. In the scene just before they go on their night out when Jip is getting all, like, excited and worked up and he turns on the TV and Bill Hicks, there's a clip from a Bill Hicks set on there where he basically spells out what the film is saying about drugs. And, you know, Bill Hicks is like famous for his habits, but always used to say he'd never had a particularly, they'd never ruined him.
Yeah, in the way that they often get portrayed as doing.
Yeah.
It also, for me, highlighted a great thing about that time in your life when you're sort of between about 17 and 21, where you do go through your Bill Hicks phase, and you're like, yeah, right, yeah. On radical. And you kind of, as you grow older, you kind of go, oh, dear. Like, so weird. And you kind of perceive Bill Hicks and other types of comedians as being kind of prophets, and you kind of go through your kind of rebel phase, I guess, and you want to just be a protester and stuff. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It really, and just the way John Simmons looked as he was watching in that sort of awe was just perfect for how people can be. But we essentially get the resolve of the getting in the club by John Simmons pretending to be a cool magazine interviewer guy, going in, blagging his way into the office of the guy who runs the place and giving him a load of rubbish about him doing an article, but the photographer hasn't turned up. And there's quite a funny bit where John Simmons phones up his grandmother and talks a load of trendy rubbish to her to confuse her.
The best bit of that is when he mentions the accident and she says, "What accident?" And then he just hangs up on her.
Yeah. Well, another thing on Jip's story is his mother is an older prostitute who has people at the house a lot, and he's sort of dealing with that being an issue in his life.
There was another good imagination cutaway there where he's in the car as he's leaving, and the punter who was upstairs with his mother is like, he's imagining him in the passenger seat describing the services that his mother offers.
Yeah.
Very graphic terms, and then, like, you know, John Sim screams at him to shut up and he's just not there. But no, that was another one of those nice little moments. And there's another one in the scene where he phones his gran to pretend he's phoning his secretary. The shot is really good where I can't remember the name of the club owner, Pablo something.
Pablo Hassan.
Yeah, the way that's framed is that when, like, Pablo's, like, looming over the camera, and then the shot of John Sim is he's, like, really far down looking right up. And then when he's on the phone, all of Pablo's, like, posse are gathered really close around him and looking right at him. Like, there's a lot of visual flair to the film that makes it really interesting to look at.
Yeah, it kind of, it shows you what every character is feeling visually, which I think is great. But they all get in. They're pleased because they're going to have a great night out. They're going to get trolleyed, mashed, squished, squashed, mangled, all of those words. And basically we have the first sort of bit of dancing that we're going to be watching for a bit with cool music, probably selected by Pete Tong, the radio DJ.
It was a wonderfully good, nostalgic soundtrack to the whole film. Really kind of, like, summed up the kind of, like, mid to late 90s.
It did.
Yeah. It was a joy to listen to.
Yeah, and not in a horrible, cheesy pop way, but in a genuine, authentic is the word that springs to mind way.
Yeah.
And you just watch them all sweatily dancing and looking awful. At that moment where you haven't accepted that it's okay, and it's just, you just look a bit weird. I don't know.
But I was going to say the authentic is quite, it is a good representation when you see everybody dancing. Like, it feels like it does when you're there. Like, there's a lot of armpits and elbows and sweat and all that kind of stuff. And everything's the wrong colour.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's definitely a sense of nostalgia there for me and, like Anthony said, for him as well, I guess. And just, like, it really, you kind of have the same journey as them from this point on, because it's, you kind of feel how they probably feel, if not, like, maybe just sitting in your house, you're not that elated as they are, but you kind of do spend the night with them and feel how they feel as it progresses into the different stages. And we get more insight into each of the characters and how they interact with each other, and, you know, basically relationships develop. We get to see Coop's paranoid side when he kind of ogles everyone in the club who's anywhere near his girlfriend. And we get to see the little brother, Lee, have his first sort of... He starts to team up with some of the other characters who are on the periphery. And he kind of... I think the director is in a particularly horrible silver jacket and stupid. Do you remember when people used to wear like beanie hats too high on the head, so they'd have, like, little pieces of toast sticking up?
Yeah,
that was weird.
They still do around here. I was actually surprised watching this film how little Welsh fashion has changed in the last 15 years.
Maybe for the people you associate with, but the people I associate with are all in their 50s, therefore it's not representative. But
it wasn't just fashion, it was like everything. It was like the cars people were driving haven't changed, the decor of the places that people go haven't changed. It's a kind of weird bubble that hasn't changed much.
Yeah, we all still seem to go to like Sports Direct and buy all our clothes there, it seems, in this country.
I think the clue here is the phrase Welsh fashion.
It was flat caps, and then it was sort of neon clothes, and then we got over it.
Well, I want to see tartan massive jackets and flat caps worn too high on your head.
But what happened after the club? They were kind of in the club for a while, but then they go to the
house party then.
Yeah, there's a house party. Although, I will say, we lose Lee.
Yeah, like I was saying,
Yeah, he gets driven off with those guys, and then we never see him again.
Oh, do we?
Because I presumed he was dead.
No, he does make it back into the car with them at the very end, where they're going back to their respective homes.
Oh, okay.
But we do lose him for a while.
He gets poached by the director and the director's friend and a nice young woman who he's been kissing and things.
I will say that bit, the director and the director's friend do a really good job of representing everyone you don't know who you bump into on a night out somewhere like Cardiff or Swansea. Like, oh, they were perfect.
And he's so overly Welsh, and you can't understand it most of the time. And he's just talking every bit of, like, contemporary slang and Welshness and slurring and high. And he does a tremendous impression of just drunk Cardiff person.
Yeah.
Probably because he's used to being one. But they have an amazing conversation, him and his friends, in the car, where they just, like, it just, they talk so much rubbish, and it just ends with just, your mother. What's the phrase they kept saying Ab a lot as well? Do you remember?
You're going to need to be more specific. The only thing I can remember is your mother.
What are you saying? Like just back and forward nonsense. Just very confusing. And that's where Lee goes. But our main posse head to this house party. Another person I mentioned in the intro, Andrew Lincoln, and he has a kind of on and off side character bit that's kind of an observation about people you sort of know but not really, and a kind of him and John Sim meet every now and again, and John Sim basically explains that
they don't want to know each other. They don't dislike each other per se, but it's not someone that he wants to see.
Yeah.
It just perfectly sums up that kind of thing that happens to everyone, I guess.
Yeah.
It's just a casual acquaintance. And I just liked how that scene just kind of summed up the whole kind of dancing politics of the interaction.
That weird kind of, we made eye contact, so we're obliged to make small talk, but we both hate each other in the back of our heads kind of thing. Yeah,
yeah, the whole film is full of moments like that that you can really relate to.
There's a great one at the house party when there's just a conversation between two random guys who aren't characters. They just say, and one of them agrees with another one, and he takes offence at it.
And
he's like, he asks him if he's making fun of him, and then he has a great line where his friend's like, "What are you talking about? Where's this coming from?" And the guy says, "Sometimes I look to you, and all I see in your eyes is pure contempt." And then it just cuts away.
There are just some tremendous moments. And like the thing is littered with lines we can't really repeat for the shell-like ears of some of our younger listeners. And
who shouldn't be watching this anyway.
But it's just full of these little moments of social politics all the way through. And there's another good one. Andrew Lincoln comes up again later on. There's a kind of moment where he's talking to a woman in a club, and they're talking about the good old days, and it's almost like it's trying to imply that, yeah, the good old days were never actually that good, but people always love talking about them, like, I was better back in the day when it was something else, and something else was happening. Yeah, Tom Tom's was better than this place. Yeah, and but then later on at the house party, there's another great like conversation that I guess there's they talk about spliff passing politics for a bit, and they have a kind of interesting kind of off reference to Jamie. You know a lot about this guy, I think. So would you like to explain the bit I'm on about?
Well, I only vaguely know him. I can't remember what his real name is. He's known as Mr. Nice. And he basically had his own little... He was famous, or he's a Welsh writer who became famous for his own mini drug-dealing empire that he had through, I think, through, like, the States. And you, I mean, you've seen the movie Mr. Nice, I haven't.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah, there's a film called Mr. Nice, which is another obvious Welsh actor that seems to be the quintessential guy to represent Wales when it comes to all things thespian. But I don't know why I was taking such a long time to say Rhys Evans, but he plays Mr. Nice, and it is just about a Welsh man who ends up being a big-name drug dealer by accident in America. But yeah, the actual Mr. Nice has a cameo in this, doesn't he?
Howard Marks, that's his name.
Yeah.
And yeah, he goes through this kind of play-by-play sports commentary of some guys passing a spliff round on the sofa.
And how you have to keep the conversation going with the person you want to get the cigarette off. The marijuana cigarette that you wish to partake in. Yeah, I just thought that was a really funny and nice in-joke in a way as well, because it's kind of a reference for people who can get it, like us clever clogs. Who seem to know who people are. I don't know. But,
know who people are.
Yeah.
What?
But the same, it was just, you know, there's no reason why you'd know who that guy is. And if you're cool like me and JB, you'd know who all the sly cameos are.
Yeah.
I believe Pete Tong is featured audibly in the radio and the car as well. I seem to recall introducing something on Radio 1. See? I get all the references, me. Anyway, my fake smugness aside.
Fake smugness?
My smugness aside. what else is happening at this house party?
There's a great conversation between... Is it Richard Coyle, the director?
Yes.
Yes.
And Danny Dyer about how Star Wars is all about drugs.
Yeah, and it's one of those brilliant, like, textbook examples of how...
Yeah.
When Stone people get together, they will have a conversation where they explain how some piece of media is a big metaphor for drugs and stuff.
And is it like, if you are in the right state of mind and you are talking to another person in the right state of mind, you can pretty much pick a random film and say, oh yeah, it's all about drugs. And you will very accurately pick apart that film and describe exactly how it's all about drugs.
Yeah, like Schindler's List is all just a metaphor for overdosing on heroin.
Yeah.
Like, you know, all the Jews that were saved by Schindler represent various narcotics, and they're being smuggled in / out of the... You know, like you can do it if you are stoned enough, come up with a good theory to explain it away. And they do a lovely little back and forth. It does a nice little narrative of its own where, like, Jeff from Coupling, or Richard Coyle, if you will, comes up with the ideas initially about Star Wars and the different drugs that various people must take / smuggle. Moff basically has an epiphany that something like the dark side of the Force wants to, I don't know, explore the universe, and Yoda...
No, the dark side of the Force wants to conquer the outer world, but the good side of the Force wants to explore the inner world.
Or something of that nature.
I think the great thing about that conversation is that it starts at about 2 o'clock in the morning, and then we go away and do other things, and then it comes back at 5 o'clock, and they're still trying to have the same conversation and can no longer just piece together what exactly they're trying to say.
Yeah, I think that is representative. That kind of... I've been in conversations where I felt that way, where earlier on in the night, usually drunk for myself, we've just hit upon something that's genius, and oh man, we've you know, we reinvented the wheel, and then later on you're like, what were we? Oh, never mind. Something about Star Wars. Like, you know, and it is very interesting to see that consolidated into essentially just a bit of a little bit to kind of show us Moff's ramblings.
But then we get, like, as this goes on, Jip admits to himself in his head that he is actually in love with Lulu, his friend, which is something that he said the whole time can't happen because they're friends and it's not allowed. But then this is where the film went an unexpected direction for me, because I thought that's the way it was going to go. Like, he was going to make a move and it was just going to be her being like, no, what are you doing? But we find them later on, like, I can't remember if it was in that house at the end of the party or if it was somewhere else.
It wasn't clear where they were.
I think it was the party, and then it's picked up later on as well.
Yeah, because then you find out that she's thinking the same thing, and then they kiss, and then move on to the bedroom, and he has the same problem again. And again, I thought, this is going to cause problems, and it doesn't. She's very understanding about it, and, you know.
She's like a human.
Yeah, it was weird because it was so non-filmic. Like, it wasn't... It happened the way things... This is what I mean, is like it was almost too realistic.
Are you drawing from your own life here, Jamie? Have you shared a similar experience?
I've had lots of men have this problem with me. And you do tend to be very sympathetic. No, but like... It didn't go to... Like, nothing that happened was a disaster.
Yeah. His problem is just, he thinks all of his problems are going to be a lot worse than they are, and, you know, if he just calmed down, it would be fine.
Yeah.
But it does have a kind of happy ending, so to speak, in more ways than one. But he basically does overcome his problem later on with Lulu, when it's a bit more of a relaxed environment and stuff. And I think that is good in a way, that it didn't feel the need to be overly dramatic and silly and strange.
It didn't, like, him not being able to perform wasn't some, like, big disaster, and she's sympathetic. And it's, I don't know, it's the way the film, it kind of doesn't, I don't want to say it doesn't live up to your expectations, but it doesn't unfold like a film normally would.
Yeah, and in many ways, it's a good film to watch if you are either suffering from similar problems, or just it's nice to know that life isn't too serious and you mustn't be too worried about, you know, social life and social pressures and all of this stuff. It kind of is a nice example of not to take yourself too seriously and worry about the little things too much. But, you know, impotency aside, what are the stories... did we build to a crescendo? We don't have too much of a resolution to the Coop Nina thing, other than he's a paranoid, she gives him a row. He kind of... Oh, he also has a problem of his own. His dad is suffering from, like, some form of dementia and has gone a bit off the rails mentally, isn't he? And so he's dealing with that emotionally and... But, you know, he's going to talk about it at least, so...
He does have a nice kind of heartfelt conversation with Jip about that.
Yeah, a lot of them talk about their problems and issues, and when they're not, you know, spouting weird catchphrases that you may not understand or using mock accents, there are some touching moments of dialogue between people.
That's one of the things I really liked about it, was that a lot of them actually had some fairly significant issues in their lives. But they were really integrated into their lives. It wasn't the big deal of the movie. It was just something that they had, and they dealt with it.
This kind of comes back to what I'm saying, is that none of the problems that they had felt like elements of a plot.
Yeah.
It was just stuff going on in their lives, and they talk about it, but the main thrust of what's happening is their night out.
Yeah, it's like they've got some touchy-feely issues, but it doesn't really try and be all, let's talk about it. It's not like it's not like some kind of video that kids would be shown to sort of, you know, teach them about the adult world. It sort of is more realistic, and it's intercut with so much funny stuff. Like, there's just realistic moments and funny bits. Like, one of my favourite bits later on is Coop and Jip are talking, and they're I presume using a credit card to separate talcum powder up, I don't know what for. And they're doing that on a glass table, and they're having this amazing conversation about Coop's dad initially, but then they get on to how baked they are, and they're just staring into the glass and kind of staring at us having this conversation where they just like basically replete expletives at each other.
Yeah, and they
come to terms
talk,
with their own highness.
They talk exactly the kind of rubbish that you talk in that situation. Like, it's again, it's another good like realistic representation of what you are like.
I'm fine. Just all the way through, there's tremendous just conversations that, like, I just, every phone call is exactly like talking to your mate phone calls where you just talk rubbish to them and start with nonsense and end like, on a high. It's just ridiculous.
Much earlier on in the film, when he phones Moff and, like, organises the night out, he doesn't say bye to him. He tells him to F off and then just hangs up the phone.
Some time doing fake Liverpudlian accents.
Yeah, and I can't count the number of times I've signed off a phone call in exactly the same way. Not with any malice, just because I don't want to say goodbye. So, you know.
Or there'll just be moments where they're just having a conversation in a car, and instead of being a normal back and forth, it'll be just like, there's a glass in the air, boys, or a glass in the air. It's really over-the-top Welsh impression. I always find myself in those weird, like, just back and forth in a joke, in like, kind of in-joke things, isn't it?
Yeah.
Would you guys testify we often end up just talking the same kind of rubbish?
I think the listeners would testify.
They've had mainly rambling on from us, I would say. Mainly, I'm sorry. But so after the house party, we get, well, towards the end, we get a kind of look back at the evening. Well, more of a what happens at the end of the night, where everyone just shuts down, gone all quiet, no one wants to talk, everyone's a bit paranoid and weirded out, and it kind of shows the negative side a little bit of the aftermath, the coming down element of
even that though isn't portrayed as particularly terrible. Like, it is for Moff. Like, Moff has a rough time when he comes down. But the weird thing is, like, you know, towards the end, instead of like doing so, like, in say in something more serious, not Trainspotting, but something that was trying to be Trainspotting, you'd have him coming down so he'd take more drugs to bring himself back up again, and he'd like OD and end up in hospital or die. Whereas in this, he comes down and then he kind of goes, do you know what, I don't think I'm going to take any more drugs. And they all kind of go, they make fun of him, and then they're like, yeah, all right.
you're probably right. They basically say on the nose, like, yeah, there comes a point where, you know, the highs aren't as good as, you know, the lows are worse than the highs, and then you stop.
Yeah.
You grow up, and it just kind of goes, yeah, you'll grow out of it, don't worry. And it's like, oh,
yeah,
that's very reasonable and rational.
Yeah.
It puts forward very many rational points about drug use as well, that I think, it does a nice cutaway, a fantasy sequence where there's a teacher talking to Lee about drugs and how they, like, affect your body. And then Jip is there telling him, nah, it's not that bad, it's not this bad. But then it, like, mentions impotence, and then Jip's like, but it is very measured in its approach. I think it does show the negative side while basically we're asked, fine, don't worry about it.
It doesn't, yeah, it doesn't beat you over the head with it or try and teach you a lesson with it or say, you know, oh, drugs are terrible. Look at all these people. They took all these drugs and they turned inside out.
But after the dead bumblebee phase of the night, where we're just around slightly vacant and quiet, we retire to, I think maybe it's possibly Coop and Nina's place or something, and they all sort of basically couple up or go quiet or whatever.
And, it was weird because Coop and Nina were definitely there. Jip and Lulu were definitely there. I don't know what happened to the other guys.
I think Lee must have got dropped off. Danny Dyer was just cockneying about somewhere.
Danny Dyer goes into space and talks to Joe Brown.
That's right. He goes home and he is spending some time talking to reality. Joe Brown is the voice of reality.
And then he goes home and attempts to spend some time with himself.
I love how that pans out. He gets found out by his mum and she just has a fit of giggles. He's really mortified. And then nothing else is said about it.
Well, why would they bring it up again?
Just around the table with the police officer father who's already, you know, got Danny Dyer's character in the bad books. And there's a moment where they all are sort of having their Sunday lunches on the next day, and like I think Lulu's having one with her like priest father and her.
Oh, it's her uncle and auntie. I think.
Oh right, yeah, yeah.
And there's yeah, a nice subtitles joke in that as well.
Yeah.
Do tell, Abby.
It's to do with the subtitles are portraying the subtext of the conversation instead of the text.
Yeah, what she really means, and I, what I liked was how the auntie. When she says something fairly pedestrian, there's a subtitle comes up for her after a while that just goes, I know what you mean. Like, she gets that she's implying something was, more about Jip, wasn't it?
She asks him, she asks Lulu something about Jip. How is he? Like, yeah. And the subtitles, when she responds that he's fine, same as always, is he's a great shag. And then the auntie says something, yeah, completely, like, pedestrian. And underneath it says something like, yeah, I bet he is.
And so, and there's also a bit where Danny Dyer kind of has to, but like he's sort of imagining rewinding the conversation his parents are having with him and the kind of judgmental things they're saying. And he just has a breakdown and shouts at them. And I thought it was quite funny and unexpected. And he kind of again, storms off.
Yeah, I like the fact, though, that after he storms off, that's when he has his like little moment of, yeah, I don't think I'm going to take any drugs anymore. It's like he's done this like rebellion thing and he stormed off, but now he feels bad.
Yeah.
And it's not like he's acted out and he's recognized it and he's like, oh, I'm acting a bit of a div here. I need to like sort myself out, which is not the kind of thing that you normally see from films like this.
Yeah. But he basically just walks down the street. We pan in on him from high above the streets of Cardiff, and we zoom
that's
in.
The university.
Yeah. And
was it the university? I assumed that it was, but I wasn't sure.
I think on their night out montage, I noticed the wonderfully named Splot was one of the locations that they filmed.
I think
there.
You'll find it's Splow, and it's one of the classier areas of Cardiff.
Splot, mate. You're talking about it. But there are some interesting. There's just an interesting moment where they follow him for ages. He's just walking down the street, looking a bit, you know, weird, with his hood up and looking a bit worse for wear. But then he just sort of trips and swears, and then it cuts away to them in the pub. As a sort of round table, let's have a chat about the night out and let's sober up, be nice, and have a nice chat to finish the film off.
Yeah, and that's what it is as well. Like they all kind of. Everything has worked out, which is, again, was not what I was expecting at all when I started this film. Like, everything worked, like, Jip and Lulu have got together, it's worked out, his, you know, he's working, he's in full working order now.
Coop didn't go mental and hit someone he didn't mean to and break up, that was what I was expecting to happen the first time. Danny Dyer's, which
not dead.
You know, they've cut, it's kind of bizarrely offbeat, as you say, Jamie.
Yeah.
But, you know, any other parts of the thing? There's loads of little bits that we may have wanted to talk about. Has anyone got any other bits they wanted to mention or thoughts generally?
Well, the film is just packed full of just little moments, and that's what makes up the whole. But one thing I would say that I haven't really mentioned so far is that I was able to stand Danny Dyer in the film.
I was trying to think of a prudent way to put that myself.
Not just, like, stand him, but, like, probably think, like, this is one of his best performances
he's
ever.
He's suited, he's cast very well in the role, you know?
Yeah.
And because the character, normally that type of character might be obnoxious, as people sometimes think Danny Dyer is or his characters are, and it is, it just means he's suited and you like him despite being very Danny Dyer as well. He divides people often, and I think there are a few good Danny Dyer movies, a lot of ones where he plays the same thing and it's just kind of normal and annoying. And I think The Business is quite a good one. It's kind of like an 80s British Scarface in many ways. I think he's good in that, and I think he's good at this. The Odd Place, he's right for the role, but I can understand why people get a bit, you know, fed up of him. I mean, you know, generally speaking, he is kind of annoying.
Yeah, but his kind of youthfulness kind of is his advantage here, where he's more charming and funny than annoying.
I think the key, like, he gets cast in roles where he's a geezer and he's meant to be a proper cool gangster, and you go, no. Deadbeat druggy who is a bit pathetic, yes. Like, yeah. You kind of buy, you know, he needs to be a sympathetic, pathetic character, not a cool diamond geezer, Jason Statham type of guy, you know, that doesn't work.
Yeah.
Doesn't fly. But, you know, that said, there were, you know, everyone did a really good job.
Yeah, good performances all around, really.
Definitely.
Very naturalistic, very funny. Everyone very funny. And it's nice to have a balanced film between men and women. There's so many films that are about drug culture that don't have reasonable female characters in, you know? And I think there are two very good, well-rounded characters in both of the ladies in this film.
They kind of... Neither of them particularly rely on the male characters for anything.
Yeah.
They're very much... They're, you know, they're themselves. They're not, like... you know, needy or like lacking in any particular way.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
They're not stereotypes, but they are stereotypical of a certain kind of Welsh and / Irish person, and I think they're very interesting characters in their own rights, and it's good to see a film not forget that ladies are actors as well, and they can be relied upon. They're not just there for set decoration like so many...
It speaks a lot for the performances in the film in that pretty much everybody in it is very recognisable.
Hmm.
Like, I could think of a bunch of people that I've known or that I know who remind me of pretty much any one of the lead characters. And I can also see, like, stuff I've done or my own behaviour in them as well.
And just everyone in the background, almost. There's like, yeah, you know who all of them are from our own experiences.
It's, I don't know, I've got weirdly mixed feelings about it, because I don't think it's a great story, but I think it's a great snapshot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like it feels like a chunk taken out of a bunch of people's lives and just presented to you without being done beginning, middle, and end.
Yeah, I think most of us, because we're from a similar, if not identical, background, you know, not identical, but we're all from a similar background, so we relate to it. Maybe people who aren't from our right era or the right location wouldn't really get it, but then if it's alien to you, it'll be all the more entertaining. You'll just find every line just baffling. Maybe you won't understand any of it. Like, when they're not doing their own accents really weirdly, they're doing other people's accents atrociously, and it's just full of 90s terminology and Welsh terminology, and it is a wonderful piece of other people's culture if you're not from this background, you know?
I think it depends what you're going in expecting. I think if you go in expecting a film about drugs, you may be disappointed, because there are no pronounced character arcs or pronounced plot.
It was, just before I forget, it's not quite what you were talking about, but I like the way that the closest they get to actually taking drugs is just sort of moving the talcum powder around on the table. They don't even snort it. They just give it a little nudge.
Again, that's, I think, in a way, is well-observed behaviour of someone who's having a night out. They just sort of keep doing a thing without realising.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not too explicit. It's not like Scarface or anything.
Yeah.
There is drug use in it, and it is about that, but it isn't really trying to glamorise it in any obvious way, I don't think.
Yeah. I think it's a very kind of even-handed and reasonable representation of drug culture. It doesn't try and teach you anything. It doesn't try and put you off.
No. And I think that's what it was trying to do, and I think that's an important thing to do. Something like Scarface that's like a kind of rehash of Hamlet and trying to show you the great peaks and troughs, whereas this is a more... Look, this is just my experience from, you know, this world, you know, and here it is.
And I think that's where the whole thing about it not feeling like a film but just feeling like a bunch of people's weekend comes from. Like there's no consequences partly, or there's no long-term consequences or long-term highs, because we're only seeing this little bit of these people's lives, and they all seem to be okay.
So, you know, guys, final thoughts. Abby?
I think Jamie used a few terms there that pretty much sum it up, where it's just very competent and even-handed. And that's what I like about it. It doesn't press anything. It does things in quite imaginative ways. And it's not preaching to you in any way, which I like.
Yeah. I like the fact that it's just funny and quotable and likable, you know? Like, that's enough for me. It doesn't even have to have a big point in mind. If it amuses me, then that ticks a box. Anthony?
I'm in two slight minds about it. Only in the fact that I wish I'd seen it, say, like 10, 15 years ago when it was a bit more fresh.
Mm.
And I think I could have enjoyed it a lot more. But only seeing it recently, I kind of... Well, I don't think it's the film's fault because it's got like this kind of manic pace and it's all over the place. And it's supposed to put you in the mind frame of these people and the kind of life they're living. Mm. And in a way, it's kind of a bit off-kilter sometimes and a bit disturbing. But I guess that's kind of the point in those places. But for me, it was a bit disruptive throughout. But I do like how it's kind of... You may go in thinking it's your typical kind of party film.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean. Where, like, these people are going to a place or somewhere for the night and, like, they'll go through a huge transformation. By
yeah, this one out-of-hand weekend gone awry kind of movies.
Yeah, so it's like that, but like we have been saying, it's much more real and not very filmic. So it's not about how everything is going wrong. It's about how these people are coming together, being good friends, opening up to each other and solving their problems.
Yeah, it's kind of a social manifesto in many ways.
Yes, so I think I like it more because I'm Welsh and can relate to it a bit more.
Mm.
But I see what you're saying about it. It is just a funny film filled with funny lines, funny characters, just weird things happening.
Yeah, and lots of meta stuff and, like, fantasy sequences and stuff.
Yes. So, some mixed feelings, but overall I did enjoy the film.
Hmm.
About you, Rich?
Yeah, good. Liked it. That's why I said it should be watched. No, I like totally. It's just funny, isn't it? It's good. Like it, relate to it. We've said it all. Jamie, I don't think I've forgotten about the rating system, guys. You think. What drug is it mixed with what Welsh thing? Is it ecstasy?
Oh, well, yeah, well,
leak? Is it acid in some half a bread? So think about that.
I would say I've got mixed feelings about it as well. Like, I don't think it's successful as a film or as a story. And there are parts of it where I think it began as if it was going to be. Like, it sets up certain things that aren't resolved. But I couldn't work out whether they were not resolved on purpose. Like the thing about Coop's dad. And I couldn't work out if the reason that's not resolved is because, like I said, this is just a snapshot of their lives. It's not a complete story.
Mm.
So it leaves that as a loose end because it just would be, you know, stuff like that is ongoing. There's no end to something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, yeah, as a film or as a story, I don't think it's particularly successful because it doesn't follow a traditional structure, but as a representation of just like a weekend out in the lives of people who, you know, live in this kind of culture, it's a very good representation. And I think, despite its surrealism, you know, like the really overt surrealism, it's actually very realistic because the surrealism comes from somewhere very real, like the...
Your own thoughts, really, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's all like internalized stuff and it's all very kind of accurate. And I think it's funny. But I do think it benefits from having had relatable experiences. Like if you watch it and you're thinking, oh man, that's exactly like this person or that time or whatever, then you get a lot more out of it.
Sure.
Whereas if you're just going in expecting a film, then you would be let down. But no, I think it's a great representation of just youth culture from a particular time and from a particular place.
Yeah, if you're the editor of Parish Weekly, maybe you have less in common with our main characters, but
yeah.
I like to think there is something for everyone in it. You will have a little chuckle, whoever you are, probably. If only at how baffling youth can be.
Yeah, and it does make me think, you know, the fact that I'm relating to just makes me think, oh, was I just a really irritating?
Oh, yeah. We all were. I think that's what it made me realise. Yeah. You have to go through a phase like that, but it is embarrassing when you remember. And then you think, oh, am I going to be embarrassed at my life now? Of course I am. Every moment is reflection upon embarrassment. But there we go. So, wait. Drug-based rating system. I don't know. Any rating systems at all? Any thoughts on what this film is out of whatever? Every time the rating system has to be a car crash, it is the spoiler-filled film conversation hooray tradition that our rating system makes no sense, because there's no point rating a thing after you've talked about it at length. So this is what we do.
I think the film is encapsulated in Lulu's outfit when they go out, because it's garish and kind of ugly and glittery and, you know, draws your attention. Also a little bit funny.
Yeah.
Because I laughed at what she was
wearing. It was ridiculous. It was something that Baby Spice would reject. It's a ridiculous pink catsuit thing.
And it captured, you know, 90s club culture perfectly, as this film kind of does.
Yeah. Good. Very clever. Well done.
Yeah.
Didn't even say, like, oh, it's a daffodil spliff or a leek bong.
Can I change mine to daffodil spliff?
I suppose. So ignore all that eloquent stuff.
No, I'm sticking to what I said. It was much cleverer.
Abby?
I'm struggling with this one. Usually I'm quite good at the bizarre rating system. But this week...
I've just come up with another one if you want to steal it.
Oh, tell me.
Oh, a hollowed out leek used like a bong.
Yeah.
No. it's not wrong, but it's not my style.
It's a pea in a Welsh cake.
It's a
heroin lava bread injection.
Oh, I was thinking of a weed Welsh cake rather than brownie.
Oh.
If this was a drug, it would definitely be marijuana. Even though it's kind of more about the ecstasy culture.
Yeah.
That's definitely the kind of vibe you get.
But it's also sitting around giggling.
If you could
for an hour and a half.
If you could smoke Welsh rarebit. It would be that.
You made me forget what I thought of.
Don't worry, Abby. I think we've all thrown in enough for this one.
I thought mine was pretty good.
Metaphors coming out of our ears.
I thought of something now. It isn't quite right, because it's more of an experiential thing again. But it's how I felt the first time I saw The Moomin.
What?
Where you're just kind of sitting there going, I don't understand what I'm looking at exactly, but I'm enjoying it. And it's kind of straight, it's kind of funny.
And kind of foreign at the same time. What are these odd little things doing? It's like The Moomins, sure. Oh man, Moomins is just about drug culture, isn't it? Because the little white hippo things represent the drug dealers.
Oh man, and the Grok is totally like the man.
And that weird, spiteful little woman, what's her name? Mai. She represents... Yeah. When you're having a bad trip.
Oh, God, yeah.
Anyway. Anthony, do you have any ideas? You're probably right. We have done ridiculous numbers.
I think we've all spitballed quite a few ideas there.
Yeah.
I've got nothing else.
And good. And as a podcast, I would say we have nothing else to say on the matter as well, apart from to bid our listeners adieu. So... adieu.
Adieu.
Until next time.
Nice one, bravo!
That's a nice one!